dinner between two people is like a job interview.
I kind of, maybe 70% went out on this date because I wanted to go to Rao's.
It's the magic of dim lighting. Yeah. I think you really need that on your team. How about the worst date?
He was the age of my father.
He brings flowers.
We have a 10-course tasting menu.
You're sitting next to a couple who's been together for a long time and is not speaking to each other.
The restaurant does not have a liquor license.
She's rude to the service people.
It's so loud you can't hear each other.
He snaps his fingers when he wants to get the server's attention.
You realize you're cousins.
Oh my God.
Hi, and welcome to Burnt Toast from food52.com, a podcast about what we all talk about around the stove, at the water cooler, in the office. It's what doesn't make it onto the website, but what we're all talking about otherwise. I'm Amanda Hesser, one of the co-founders of Food52, and I'm here with our managing editor, Kenzie Wilbur, and our wonderful guest, Adam Sachs, the editor-in-chief of Sever. Hey, Adam.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And today we're going to talk about first date food. Tricky stuff. Tricky topic.
Yeah.
It's kind of a scary topic. But Amanda, you sort of literally wrote the book on first date food. For those of you who don't know, Amanda has a book called Cooking for Mr. Latte, in which she writes about meeting Tad and their courtship. So maybe that's a good place to start. I want to know what, in your mind, makes a good first date. I hear that it wasn't the date that Tad took you on.
We met at a place called Merchants New York.
Yeah.
Do you remember? There was one on the Upper West Side.
Oh, yeah.
There was one, yeah, there were a couple. The one that we went to has since closed. And I had never, it was only two blocks from where I lived, but I'd never been in it. And I thought it was a strange choice, but I went with it. But I didn't really expect us to eat there. I just figured we were having a drink. But then we were seated. I later learned that actually Tad had planned to have dinner across the street, but because I guess the server had encouraged us to sit down, he just went with it. Before I knew it, he was having a Budweiser, and I was having a very kind of, I think it was a tomato soup that hadn't really seen, tomatoes hadn't seen much real sun ever. And then after dinner, he had a latte, and he puts Equal in it.
Oh.
So there were some issues.
This is the same Tad you are now currently married
to? Yes. But the great,
so you forgave him for the artificial sweetener?
The great life lesson here is that you can have really terrible first date food and still get married.
Because then you can write a book about it.
Well, I honestly actually think you shouldn't necessarily eat on the first date.
No.
Because there's so much going on. And that just adds like layers of unnecessary pressure. And like food is super personal. It's almost like that should be like the next layer of the onion that you are kind of revealing to each other.
Rule number one, do not go to dinner.
No, you can't. We should be really clear about this. It's a terrible, terrible idea to have dinner on a first date because it's dinner between two people is like a job interview. You're facing each other. You're trying to get information out of each other. It's like direct eye contact. And then you're like three courses in, you're like an hour and a half in, and you're scrambling to remember stuff they said.
So a friend of mine does a lunch date, first date move, which I have a lot of respect and admiration for, but it makes me want to have an anxiety attack.
That's like the worst of all worlds.
Right?
So it's a meal,
it's
light, and everyone, and no one's
well
going to drink.
And it's sober.
Yeah, this is. Yeah.
I had this funny lunch first date. I met this man in a restaurant, and it was in a very like dim, kind of cozy bistro-y restaurant. He was at the next table. We started chatting when my friend got up, and then we exchanged numbers, and then we decided, he was like, let's meet for lunch at Nobu.
Fancy.
Fancy, right? So I was super excited, and at that point I was like, I don't know, I was like practically just out of college. I had no money. I was wearing like shoes that I'd had for like 5 years and kind of embarrassing, like non-stylish clothing. And he arrives in this like beautiful Italian suit. But in the light of day, it became very clear that, like, he was the age of my father. And it was just proceeded to be, like, the most awkward lunch ever, because I think he had this kind of look of horror. He had no interest in dating as someone as quite as young as me. and, you know, us trying to like politely like work our way through talking about art, which I knew very little about.
Yeah.
And he knew a ton about, while eating this very expensive sushi.
So good.
It was
a tough one.
So those meals are endless.
Also, just the magic of dim lighting.
Yeah.
I think you really need that on your team when you meet somebody for the first time.
Flattering lighting.
Right. While we're on the subject of the first date, let's talk about cocktails. Do you judge the drink order of your first date?
You don't. I mean, I don't think you consciously. I'm not watching, you know, if they order a Cosmo, I'm out of there and pretend to go to the bathroom and never come back. But no, I think you. I mean, we're all probably pretty judgy people about food and drink, or we wouldn't be sitting here in this padded room. But yeah, you probably do in the same way. Yeah, I think part of what you're doing when you first meet someone is looking for any signs of, you know, either you want it to work and so you're projecting a lot of positive stuff, or you're very worried that they're, you know, going to turn out to be terrible people. So you're reading too much into everything.
It's kind of like a cloud of subtle judgment anyway, right? You're sort of like watching the person and observing them and seeing what they do. And if they order like tequila shots on your first date, like that's a thing that you might want to pay attention to.
better than having dinner, though.
Better still better than having a job interview dinner.
As long as they order for both of you. If they're just ordering
as long as they offer you a shot, too.
Rounds of shots for themselves.
A former boss of mine was telling me once about how in France, people will often order the same thing as a sign of companionship.
That's interesting.
And so that's something that I would do.
So that to me is a really, really lovely spin on something that I do because I'm sweating so hard I can't think. Like they'll order something and I'll be like, me too.
Yeah, sounds good.
I'll have what they're having.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think you're also, I mean, so you're looking at what they're ordering, but you're also trying to think about, like, what physically is, you know, pleasant to eat around a new person. So I think, like, I love pasta, but eating pasta in front of someone for the first time, especially if you're in a face-to-face situation, there's a lot of slurping. There's a lot, or, like, long pasta.
Like ramen. Ramen is a ramen tough early date.
Yeah.
Really? And I feel like salad is the tough one. I always, you know, I want to eat a salad, but I don't want, like, you know,
is it the judgment
spinach
or the
in my teeth?
Oh, yeah.
But also things like, I mean, and this is very granular, but things like pea shoots. Like, it's pea shoots are basically like that magician trick where the scarf, like, keeps coming out of the sleeve. Like, they actually keep going into your mouth forever and ever and ever, and they never stop. I stay away from that for sure. But do either of you have a first date drink order?
When I was single, I would always, well, I was a freelance writer at the time, so a lot of times I was on, the person I was going to go see was the first human being I'd talked to all day. So that can be a little bit of a rough transition from being, you know, in your mind to trying to be social with a new person. So I would get there first, always first. I'm never otherwise on time for anything. I would get there first and have a Manhattan and sort of get one under my belt, which sounds probably more pathetic. It's a weird.
No, it's strategy. But I'm with you. I'm on the always get there first.
It's like an internal icebreaker.
But also I don't want to be the sort of like the one who has to walk into the bar and be like, "Are you Kenzie?
Right.
Like, are you Ken?" Like, you know, I don't want to do that. So I just sit in the back and observe. And
there are
somebody
a lot of
else
Kenzies, so
and there are so many Kenzies.
Could be other people. Yeah.
So many.
But you don't want to be so early and seem like you're anxious, right?
Like, no. I play it 1-2 minutes late, which is New York early.
You mean you're standing around the corner and then watching her?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Have the cab drop me off a couple blocks before the door.
But bars in New York can also be, assuming we've ruled out restaurants, bars in New York can be kind of, you know, crowded. Or I'd like to stake out some territory where I feel comfortable, or I'm looking in the room in a certain way. I'd like to get there early.
Okay, I have a restaurant date confession, which is that I don't even remember exactly how I met this person, but he was mentioning Rao's, and I had never gone to Rao's. I shouldn't ruin the story, but I still have not been to Rao's. But I kind of, maybe 70% went out on this date because I wanted to go to Rao's.
Totally.
And I thought maybe,
that's,
you know,
okay,
maybe after Rao's he'll, you know, seem more interesting and more
all
fun.
All that dim lighting.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll be able to tell he's 75.
Definitely age appropriate. And I thought restaurant appropriate. And then right at the last minute, he like pulled the switcheroo and he was like, sorry, we couldn't work out the Rao's. We're going to go to Gotham Bar and Grill. And
I mean, that's not terrible.
I was such a food snob at that point that I was like, oh, you know, Gotham Bar and Grill.
At least you said Chuck E. Cheese or something. No. I mean, that would be more of a
That's almost so bad it's good. Like, the water is so hot it feels cold. I would go on the Chuck E. Cheese
I would go on Chuck E. Cheese
date.
I would have dinner at Chuck E. Cheese.
I would not. But so then I show up at Gotham Bar and Grill, which is a place actually I love. And he, you know, as he's looking through the menu, he's kind of, he seems a little agitated. And then we started chatting. And it turns out that he has a lot of food allergies.
Oh.
Like, to
not,
meat.
Not his fault.
Not, yeah, to dairy, to vegetables, to bread.
To life.
Conversation.
Basically, to kind of to everything. And I had never really been exposed to that. So, like, you know, I was like, well, you know, order what you need to. He, like, put in his special order. They were very accommodating. And then as soon as he started eating the first course, he started, like, kind of, you know, loosening his tie and, you know, kind of scooching in his chair.
I'm so uncomfortable right now.
Let's just say it ended at the emergency room.
No. Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
He lived.
Yeah.
I hope so. Can you imagine if that story had taken a turn where actually he died?
Yeah. Yeah, but then I did have this other, and this was more than one date, but this guy who
this
I actually
didn't make
really,
it, actually.
I really liked. He was really fun. And he loved going to good restaurants. But, you know, I had an expense account back then. And inevitably, like, just around the time the bill would come, he would, like, you know, have a call. Or
bathroom.
He would, yeah, had to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
So finally, I just, I you know, I stopped. I said, you know, I think we're done. Like, you know, tried to kind of end things nicely. And he was like, well, I need to know why. And I was like,
wow.
And I thought, you know, I kind of owe it to this guy who's like a good person otherwise. So I said, you know, because you're a cheapskate.
Oh.
There it is.
You go.
Oh.
And he said, what? Really? He's like, that's terrific. I'm so glad you told me. So I don't know if he's reformed, but he took it very well.
Because he could still be handsome. He could be charming. He could be all these nice things.
I know.
He's just a cheapskate.
And
he must know
and
that.
And he was an investment banker at that point. It was totally unfair.
Yeah.
Did he also put equal in his coffee?
He did not.
So let's talk about the restaurant pick. If you don't have an expense account or you don't, I mean, you don't know this person, but you want
to impress
them.
You're not pretending to take someone to Rao's.
You're not pretending to take someone somewhere you're not going to go. You don't want to end up in the emergency room.
Well, it's a bad
room.
Movie. Like, he should have just said, like, let's go to Gotham Bar and Grill. I would have been pretty excited.
Right.
Yeah, it's the expectation he set.
He also couldn't eat anything at Rao's, so.
Well, maybe that was
why
we didn't go there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, he didn't want to maybe tell
he
me
couldn't
that
couldn't eat anything at Gotham Bar
until we were on the way to the emergency room, yeah.
He's a regular. He's only had the sunflower seeds and water, but he's a regular.
but he loves the staff.
It's amazing.
So what's the ideal restaurant, you know?
Dark. Bar seating.
No white linen.
Small plates. I don't hate small plates, but I'm not like an all small plate person. But I think little sharing things, because then you can kind of see, is this person going to eat everything? You don't have to be responsible for your own big plate of something. It's
right.
it's cooperative. You're doing something, sitting in a bar. You're looking out. You're experiencing the same thing instead of having to look at each other for the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So something, a bar with a corner with little
the
things
you can
eat.
The corner seat at the bar is that's the power move.
That's why you get there early. That's why you got to get there early.
You got to stake it out.
Yeah.
You got to stake it out.
All right. I think a walk. Before or after?
Well, I think
nice.
You've been cooking on a walk.
No, a walk. W-A-L-K.
A walk before?
Or after. I feel like it's actually kind of a nice thing.
Because
it's a different... Well, I was thinking, like, when you were saying, like, you're looking out, like, you're not looking at each other. You're kind of seeing how they... What kind of manners they have and, like, how... I don't know,
so
silently like,
judging their manners. Are they a fast walker? Are they a slow walker? Is this a deal breaker?
What do they observe? Like, what do you...
I feel like
it's easier to have a... Like, you're a more relaxed conversation if you're moving.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to, like, the fifth or sixth date. You've made it to the fifth or sixth date, and you are crazy, so you're going to cook for them. What
I'm
do you make?
That. Well, I have a creepy admission that... This is just private, right? This isn't.
Is it?
This isn't
we're not rolling.
Okay,
so go
good.
Ahead.
Yeah. When I was single, I really liked. I mean, it was fun to cook for people, but you have to plan ahead a little bit. So I would make these sort of giant batches of like pork shoulder ragu, and then portion them off in two person portions and freeze them.
Hopeful tuber. Wow.
Aspirational tuber.
Wow.
Prepared. And then I lived in the West Village, and I lived near Raffetto's Pasta, and so I always get, you know, like 6 pounds of pappardelle, and I would have them put it in 1 pound, you know, bags. And you can keep those stacked neatly in the freezer.
So if a date opened your freezer, she would just be like, oh my God.
let them look in the freezer.
I was going to say, because would they get offended? Like, oh my gosh, I'm just one of many stacks of pappardelle.
Yeah. But it's a small New York kitchen. The small New York kitchen, so me just being in the kitchen blocked their access to the refrigerator.
So what happens when you cook for her a second time?
No, you have to have
something else.
Does
she get the
same? No. You have to have it. Then you can do some live cooking.
Then you can do some live cooking.
But it was nice, because by the time you'd come home and maybe you'd had a few drinks, because you made the, you know, you're smart enough not to go to a restaurant. And
you had the Manhattan before they even got there?
Maybe, yeah, a small one. And from the kids' menu. And and then you come in and you throw this, you know, frozen hockey puck of really rich stuff in a pan, and then you boil some water, and you get dinner in, you know, 10 minutes or something.
I'm impressed.
That's a really slick date move,
I have to say. I'm really impressed. Yeah. That would work for me.
It was good for impromptu stuff. It wasn't like a plan. You know, you wouldn't invite someone over from a week from now.
Well, it didn't seem planned.
It seemed, right.
Yes.
Good distinction.
Planned spontaneity.
Yes.
Exactly. Amanda, what did you cook Tad for your first?
Well, he cooked for me first, I believe. I made something for him. I made an apple tart. I had planned this. Oh, and a picnic. That's true. I planned this outing to Storm King.
Nice.
And then apple picking. Oh. But what I had sort of misplanned was that.
So much better than my creepy,
creepy
pasta for two in the freezer.
So I made some kind of sandwich, I can't remember, and little goodies for the picnic. But then the bad part of that plan that I hadn't calculated was that, like, apple picking takes, like, 5 minutes. You fill a bushel in, like, 5 minutes.
Right.
And then I was, like, over, and I was like, oh, no. Like, I wanted to spend the day with him, you know? And then I was like, now what do we do? So we ended up, like, you know, just driving back slowly. but then I was like, okay, well, how am I going to, like, make an excuse to see him again? So I was like, I'm going to make him an apple tart.
Nice.
And, like, surprise deliver it. So I just, like, showed up at his door with this apple tart and just
said,
and then I went home.
That's really
he
sweet.
Let you turn around and walk away?
I think he chatted with me for a few minutes, but I think he was kind of startled by it because nobody had tried that move on him before.
So if someone came to you asking you, you know, I really like this person, we've had 3 or 4 dates together, I need to cook something, what would you tell them to make? I'm asking for a friend.
That's a hard one. I think it just depends on the person. You want to make, it's like that dinner party truism that you want to make something that you're comfortable with, probably something that is not the first time you've made it. And I think also something that doesn't seem like you're trying too hard.
Yeah.
It seems sort of, you want to project your dish, you want your dish to project whatever you want to project about yourself, which is that you're, you know, calm and suave and not, like, trying too hard to make some big statement.
Mm-hmm. So cooking together, this is totally different.
Oh, we're flash forwarding a lot.
But also, like, I think this is, like, a super crucial thing.
This could make or break.
Oh, yeah.
This is sort of like a couple going to IKEA together. Like, if you make it through cooking a dish together,
right,
you come out the other side of those IKEA doors and you haven't broken up. You're good.
Except
you're
with
just
IKEA.
You're carrying this thing that you have to put together.
I was going to say, IKEA, you still have all that work ahead of you.
There's a long road. So what do you cook together? What's a good dish?
I'm not for cooking together.
You're not?
Tell us why. Because I'm not good at it. I don't know how to delegate or stay out of people's way. And I like picking, you do this dish, I'll do these dishes, but I can't, you know, like, throw you some eggs and you hand me the whisk or something. I don't have
who
that.
Does that?
I don't know if it really works that way.
Yeah. I like division of duties. And I also like to just get into it. So sometimes it's hard to do it with someone else around.
Yeah, it's a little hard to, like, maintain a conversation while trying to cook something that the other person will still find impressive. That's, like, the ultimate amount of juggling that I think that you really don't want to be doing.
Oh, to keep talking while you're...
Yeah,
to do that. Yeah, that's... I can't pull that off. Unless you've done a lot of work ahead
of
time.
But then, I mean, there's herbs to wash during the awkward silences. Like, arguably, you have something to do with your hands. Amanda, are you pro cooking together?
Well, I was just thinking about we went to Adam's for dinner.
It wasn't
and
a
I was
date,
so
though, really.
It wasn't a date.
I didn't know.
okay, I think we just had a moment.
it was like otherwise it would have been like a key party or something because yeah. It was a lot of people.
Yeah.
It was super fun. I was so impressed that Adam could like, you know, he was just so seemed so relaxed and like kind of, you know, just very calmly walking around his kitchen, serving course after course and cooking and not seeming to like need to measure anything or like look anything up.
It was
like all these little ice blocks. That
you're like, everything was kind of square and melting in a pan.
Totally. But I was marveling at it because I was like, I could never do that.
That is such a nice compliment. I can't believe that's actually true. I feel like I do a lot of fretting when people come over and I sweat. And
you were not fretting at all.
I tell people everything that's went wrong with the dish while they're eating it. You know, what it should have been, how it would do everything you're not supposed to do when you entertain. But that's nice to hear.
Any horror stories? Any weird date food? Any like cooking?
I just remembered one.
Oh, good.
There was a week period, W-E-E-K period, when I was dating this woman from Paris and she was staying in my old apartment. It's a long time ago. And I came home from work once and she said, you know, surprise, I made steak tartare. And my apartment was so disgusting. And the idea that she had brought, and she used the grinding attachment on the stand mixer thing, and she'd found somewhere in the neighborhood, you know, raw beef and ground it in my kitchen, and that I was going to eat uncooked food that had been prepared in my grimy little kitchen was terrifying. So, but you can't say, you know, you have to smile and say, that's fantastic. And I just, you know, was terrified as I was eating it. So we survived. But
you lived to tell.
Yeah.
How much did you make it through?
The relationship or
I guess both.
We ate most of it.
You ate the whole thing.
Yeah. It was good.
Dedication.
But it was scary.
What about you, Amanda? Any horror stories?
I think my one horror story, it's more what I made. I was cooking for the parents of a like new boyfriend and I just messed it up so horribly. And I remember like we went and got artichokes and I didn't really know what I was doing. But I was like, I just was trying to make this very like highfalutin meal, which was silly. And there must've been soap still in the pot. And so I finally got the artichokes after like taking me like 3 hours to trim them into the pot. And there was just like soap bubbles.
Ooh.
And it was one of those moments where I was like, do I start over? Do I rinse them? So I somehow got through that night. I don't think the food was, it was barely edible.
That's reminding me of a story that one of our coworkers has at Food 52, and she was on a very early date with a guy, I think it was like number 3 or 4, and he wanted to cook for her, and he made her artichokes, but he didn't know what he was doing either, except for it wasn't soap that sunk his ship, it was actually that he didn't know how to prep them, so he cut the entire thing off, and he thought that the stem was the edible part, so he boiled the stem, and he served the stems, and Lauren, I mean, just ate the whole thing. She ate the entire
thing.
That's
impressive. It was like giving someone a pine cone or something.
Right, right.
And did the date work out? Or
they are no longer together. But I don't think it's the artichokes that
so
did
watch
it.
Out, ladies.
So watch
someone,
out.
Someone out there is going to invite you over for artichoke stems.
So that's it for this episode of Burnt Toast. Our producer is Tim Einenkel. Thanks also to Laura Meyer and Andy Bowers at Panoply. Please let us know what you think of the show. Our Twitter address is @food52, and you can email us at editors@food52.com. If you like the show, please tell everyone you know and subscribe to us on iTunes. If you have any first date food stories, or if a first date is not going well, please take a photo and send it to us. We'll regram it for you. We want to know all about it. So hashtag them with F52podcast. For Kenzie and Adam. Adam, thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for having me. This was fun. A great first date.
I'm Amanda Hesser. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks so much for listening.